Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 638 for comics originally released on October 30th, 2019. Now, starting us off in DC is Batman Annual number 4. This is from the diary of Alfred Pennyworth, a Batman tale like no other.
You sound so excited when you say that.
Oh yeah. This is one that I think we both looked at the solicit and thought, hey, this looks interesting. You know, what's it like to be Batman from day to day?
Yeah.
What are the challenges the Dark Knight detective faces? From thieves to marauding monsters, writer Tom King takes us across the gamut of experience to show the vast scope of what it takes to fill the Batman's boots and then what it means when he goes back home. That's not a bad solicitation blurb.
Not bad at all. It made it sound kind of interesting.
It did. I really wish the person who wrote that blurb wrote this story.
Oh, you make me laugh.
I didn't go double check this, but I don't recall anywhere in this issue where we actually had a word balloon.
No, there is no dialogue in here. So literally, it's almost like you're reading the diary notes of Alfred Pennyworth, which has nothing to do with his life. It's about what he's observed of Batman, which, you know, is kind of, I guess it's true to what it said, but kind of weird. I would hope he said something about himself. I would hope he had purpose beyond Batman.
It didn't seem that way. And I guess part of it for me is this was an illustrated story, not a comic book story.
Yeah, very much so. And I don't tend to enjoy that as much. It really pulls me out of the story. I mean, I read these things and I start, you know, getting distracted and my mind just kind of wanders off because I don't feel like I'm interacting with the story at all.
Yeah, exactly. Because with this story, Batman could be mute for all we know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's actually a line somewhere where he says, or the captions say what Batman said. But as you can tell just by that phrasing, it's taking you out of the story.
Very much so. So you felt the same way I did, because when I read this, I just felt, you know, not to make it bad. I don't think this is like the worst thing that Tom King has done to Batman, but I felt a little bit bored as I was reading it.
There was definitely a point at which I kind of checked out.
Yeah, I completely checked out. And what's weird is, you know, I can see what he was going for and I can see what he's trying to do, but I don't know. He did it in such a boring way. If there would have been some caption, if there would have been some interaction, and maybe how it affected, you know, Alfred's life, that would have been a better story than just having literal notes and pictures. That's all we saw.
Definitely that would have been more interesting. It still wouldn't have totally fit the what's it like to be Batman from day to day.
No, maybe if he did something Batman related.
Something. But I mean, even from the very first page, it kind of lost me.
Okay, let me get to the first page.
Because we're dealing with the Cavalry Charge, a bunch of men who are robbing a bank, which is located at the bottom of a tower. But their getaway plan is to go to the top using the elevators and then using steeplechase horses evade Batman on horseback by rooftop.
Which I was
by rooftop that was, by, on horseback, whichever.
That was completely insane.
Now, I'm thinking, you know, downtown Austin where I live, I don't live downtown, but downtown Austin, I live in the city of Austin. There, the streets are like, you know, three or four lanes each direction. Three lanes each direction, I guess.
Yeah.
Turn lane, whatever. So you're talking jumping seven lanes every time you hit the end of a block.
I just don't see that happening.
I'll grant if the next building was like a few stories lower, okay, you've got that depth to get the distance or whatever, maybe?
But you'd be breaking the horse's legs probably at that point, I would think.
Yes.
Yeah, that just seemed completely nonsensical. And also the part where he kind of leaps off the horse and the horse is jumping in midair. I don't know what happened. That was just so weird.
Yeah, there was some of that where it didn't make sense. And he had to stop the horses from running off the next roof or something?
Yeah, they were going to commit suicide.
that whole thing, I'm just like, seriously? Come on.
Yeah, and they're wearing the Friday the 13th Jason Voorhees mask. people robbing the bank, which is awesome.
That was a different problem, because at first the guy looked just enough like Wild Dog.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I mean, not exactly like, but, you know, he's got a jersey, he's got the mask, we can't really see him that well. I'm like, what the hell? You know, and then that's the first day, and that first day goes, what, 3-4 pages?
About that.
Then we get to the second day where Batman's fighting a dragon.
Yeah, I was like, what's going on here?
Okay, not going to say this has never happened in the comics or whatever, but kind of weird.
Yes.
You know?
And it was even weirder when he kind of eviscerates it and something happens. Like, it's not done.
He kills one and another gets born out of it or something, and it's like, whatever.
Rinse, repeat. They keep popping out. That was so bizarre. I was like, what is going on here?
Then we get to the next day, and at this point, each day is taken a couple of pages.
Yes.
And we get to the charity boxing match.
Yeah, okay. I'm there right now.
And all of these are harkening back to different eras of Batman over the 80 years. So it's, again, not like he's never had a charity boxing match. But this one, the justification for it, I thought, was a little convoluted to get to it.
Yeah, I'm going to give $100 million just to charity if I can fight the Batman, which was weird.
But Batman fights this guy because he was, what, beating up his wife or something like that?
Yeah, not for the charity, because for a completely different reason.
He did it for justice and for charity. But still, it's like, come on.
Yeah, that was really weird. I don't know. Because, I guess they could say, Batman, you could just give $100 million to charity on your own. But, yeah, they had to give a justification.
By the time we hit the next story, which was a murder mystery, I'm already checking out.
That's really where I tuned out. And then that part really frustrated me, too, because you got to the murder mystery, and he's writing about all these people that he interviewed, and then there's no detective work that goes on. It's literally they just tell you who did it.
Well, they spend a page of he's got six suspects. Someone was lying. Someone. I'm like, dude, this is worth a page? I don't think so.
Yeah, and then literally on the next page, here's the guy, and here's what he did, and okay, we're going to skip all the detective work. They're just telling us what happened. All right, great.
This is one where the story was being told to me, and as we've talked about, it felt like we were being kind of held away from the events actually happening.
Yep, and it was done. It was weird because it's so different than what King has been doing in Batman, but I haven't been enjoying a lot of what King has been doing, but this is just, now he bored me.
But it's so similar to what he's been doing in Batman, because if you look at a lot of his stories in Batman, particularly of late, he's got a lot where he's got a page of art, sometimes sequential art, sometimes not.
That's true.
And tons of captions.
That happened a lot when it was the Catwoman and the Batman thing, the love thing. He had a whole issue where it was just dialogue with their pictures, taking full-page splashes. So this kind of felt like that, and that issue bored the heck out of me.
This is a prose story interspersed with comic book art.
And I would say not even an entertaining prose story.
Oh, absolutely. Because at first, the things take a good couple of pages per day.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I forget when it was. I forget if it was after the love story bit, which didn't work for me at all. You know, particularly when they're walking down by the lake or whatever. And it's like, are we cutting between two time periods, two different couples? I don't know what's going on.
But then it started going at a breakneck pace.
Then it goes to a page per day, and then a panel per day. And then it was one of those things where, you know, we get, you know, like a month, it seemed like, on a given day or something. Maybe not that many, maybe just a week or something on a given thing. And I'm like, all we get is the date.
All you get is the date and a picture of random stuff. And it made me think, this guy must get tired. I was just like, wow, he needs a vacation. I was just watching this. I was like, but yeah, there nothing happens there. There's just pictures. And then the last page would basically just say DC Comics presents every day with a few little splashes on the outside edge, which I was really disappointed. I'm glad I'm not the only one who felt this way, because I've heard people have enjoyed this. I listen to other podcasts, comic podcasts. I've been kind of tuning out of those because I'm in my college football podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people were saying, oh, this is a great story. It harkens back to the Silver Age. So I tried not to listen to what they had to say about it. But then I started listening, reading it. I'm like, this is boring. I'm not enjoying it. Why am I not enjoying it like these other people? And I'm glad I'm not the only one.
There are definitely aspects where it harkens back to the Silver Age and even earlier periods. Batman jousting a knight and stuff, him playing football, the charity boxing match. These are things, I think, if we did a little research, we could find over the 80 years where these things may have actually happened in some way, shape, or form, not as depicted here, but conceptually in Batman before.
Yeah, it's happened at some point.
And whether or not it has, it feels like the kind of thing that would have in the 50s or something like that. But we're not in the 50s.
No. And it's so weird. It's the way he wrote this, it really pulls the reader out of the story. There is no story, I would say. It's some prose that's not written in an entertaining way, in some art. So I felt like this whole thing was skippable. And yet I think he's doing this to have some weight to what he's doing in Batman with that character.
Even the things I found slightly intriguing, like the Saturday, April 10th, where Batman's sitting on the shoulder of like a giant robot or something.
Yeah, nothing's discussed there, but yeah, there it is.
Okay, cool, interesting, nice art. What the hell happened and why should I care?
Yeah, you will never know.
The art was fine. In some places it was really good. It had some cool visuals. I could see where the artist might have enjoyed working on this, might not, don't know. But the story, and I've got that in quotes, it really didn't work for me because there was no story.
That's what it was with me. And I tried to read my books a couple times to see if I missed anything, you know. So I went back and I read this and I found myself really bored again. You know, like I'd read a few pages and I'm like, okay. And I'd start, you know, checking out something on the internet. And then I'd go back and I'd read four or five pages. But I couldn't just sit there and read this all the way through because my mind would start to wander and I'd check out. And that's not a good sign.
Well, on the page going from the Sunday the 4th to the Saturday the 10th or whatever, there is nothing to read other than the days of the week and the date.
You can't bore me any more than that. I mean, it's cool. There's pictures, and they're cool pictures. You know, there's a robot. There's football. There's jousting. There's a zebra-looking Batman. There's him carrying a dog. But I will never know what these stories were. I won't know what happened. I just know that at a date, he was carrying a dog through water. And why do I care? I don't know. I don't care.
There's implication of stories. There's teases of stories. This is like a clip show.
Maybe these were the stories he was going to write if he got his full run. Who knows?
Unlikely, because he covered, I don't know, how many days did he cover in this?
Yeah, a lot. He just did this. It felt also weird, like a little self-indulgent. Like he thought this was going to be...
A little self-indulgent?
A lot self-indulgent. he thought this was going to be something that said something, a statement piece. And to me, okay, you did your statement piece. But for me, I was completely bored. I was like, okay, he had his moment. He did his thing. I kind of wish I wouldn't have spent the money on it.
It goes from March 7th, I think, to April 24th.
Yeah. Good Lord. That's a lot of material.
So almost 2 months.
2 months.
And there's no way he could have – this couldn't have been here's the stories he would have told or whatever, because each one of these stories, given the way he writes, would be a six-issue arc.
Yeah, if not more.
And not a great six-issue arc.
No. There would have been long, drawn-out things, things that happen. You don't know why they happen that way. I mean, with the City of Bane, just for example, it started off with a bang, and then completely the last three or four issues – I don't know what's going on. It's just being dragged out and nothing has happened.
Yeah.
I don't know why he does that. That's his thing.
Don't know, but I do think this was a statement issue. And the statement for me is I'm glad Tom King's time on Batman is coming to an end.
Yeah, I kind of feel that too. I wrote down, I said, this I am pretty sure will be the last issue of King's Batman that we will review because I don't feel compelled to review his 85th issue, which will be his final one.
No, I don't. I'm curious about the next one with the new writer and stuff, Tinian and stuff, but
yeah.
King stuff just hasn't worked for me. And if it's working for other people, that's great. I'm happy for them, but it's not what I'm looking for in either in Batman or in sometimes comics in general.
No. And it's weird because I would say the run started off, I was really kind of interested. I remember the Gotham Girl, the new characters, him riding the plane, like, you know, basically like a rodeo horse down into the river with a rope. I remember that stuff. And I remember his vision was really great. And I felt like he peaked really early and he's just, I don't know if he's run out of ideas and he's just filling stuff in, or maybe he just peaked real early and that was all he had.
He's got tons of ideas. I mean, look, there's the story of Batman was taken to the jungle.
Yes.
And the one where Batman awoke in chains. He's got true. Ideas. He doesn't know how to tell a comic story.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think he wants to tell a novel, but honestly, I don't think he'd be a good novelist either because he writes in a way that distracts me.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I've read some Batman novels. Some of them have been really good. Others, yeah, not so much. I think Tom King's writing style just really does not work for me on a very deep level. And that made this issue kind of awkward to figure out my rating for.
Me too. I kind of felt the same way because, like, I try to look at it objectively. You know, Tom King has not been my favorite writer. He has not been at the top of the charts. But at the same time, I like to look at it objectively. And yet I look at him like I was bored. The art wasn't bad, but it's in a comic book and it's something I paid, you know, a reader would pay $4.99. And that's tough to grade when you're like, okay, $5 and maybe other people are going to be bored out of their mind like I was.
This was one of those where I stopped, I thought about it, and I said, okay, I've got one grade for the story, I've got another one for the art. Because the art is really good in some places and stuff.
I agree, I enjoyed the art.
I mean, Jorge Fornes is good, Mike Norton's great and stuff like that. I love some of the visuals. There was just no story to go with them.
Yep.
So, I mean, if I were to judge this solely on the art, provided it, you know, there was a story I liked, but just on the art, definitely a B+, maybe even a little higher than that.
Yep.
If I go for the story, I think I'm being a little charitable to give it a D, because for half the issue, it feels like it's not a story. It's bullet points.
It's literally bullet points. Yeah.
And it frustrated me.
That's exactly how I felt. I was just like, I felt frustrated when I read it, which is never a good feeling to have when you're reading a comic. Like, you know, this is an escapist hobby. We're trying to escape, you know, you have a stressful day at work or you're just trying to enjoy life in general. And so you go and you read this book and thank God I didn't pay $5 for it, but people pay $5 for it. And then I would be so disappointed if I would have spent $5. I was disappointed as it was, but I mean, to come out of it and just be bored or reading bullet points with art. And I'd just be like, man, this really didn't feel like it was worth it.
If they had had artists I did not like on it, this would have been much easier to grade.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I didn't like the story, didn't like the art, bam, gone. But I liked the art here. And there were some cool concepts. We just never saw them actually happen.
See, I think you're almost trending in the score direction that I am. Because I'm kind of like you. I was in the D-ish range with the story. And overall, I kind of wanted to give it a D because I didn't like it, but I bumped it up because of the art.
What did you bump it up to?
C minus.
That's exactly where I landed, and I was just here shifting my thing from a C. It's like, no, that's too charitable.
Yeah, C minus. I was just like, I don't want to say it was average because I felt like it's below average. And you know, I want to give a thumbs up to the artist. If you enjoy art, it's a great art book. I mean, not great, the best, but it's good art. But if you're going there for the story, I think you'll be missing out on a good story because there is no story.
If you want a sense of the possible range of all the stories you could tell, or at least all the ways you could portray Batman in a single panel, this covers a lot of them.
Oh yeah, this is the way to do it.
But not a comic I recommend. I'm hoping at some point Tom King gets on a book and has an idea and just really knocks it out of the park, but this isn't that.
I agree. I want to see him write something well again, because I know he has it in him and he's done it in the past. I just think, I don't know, Batman was not the character for him.
I want to see him write something great. I don't know that he has it in him. I want him to do a creator-owned thing. Take something ground zero. Not be able to leverage the history of the Vision or the iconicness of Batman or anything like that.
That would be cool, because he has not done anything like that other than like touching on the CIA stuff and the worst, I can't remember what it was, like a war in Iraq type thing. I can't remember the name of it. Something, Sheriff of Baghdad, that was the story. So that was the first time he did something kind of like that. It was at Vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good, but it was kind of slow and plotting. So let's see him take another swing at it with something he doesn't know.
It's ironic though, this went from slow and plotting to too fast to tell anything.
Exactly, breakneck speed.
So, yeah. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
That sounds good.
This is Excalibur number 1. Now, despite the title of Excalibur, for some crazy reason, I wasn't expecting as much, you know, Arthurian Camelot type stuff in here. And there's a lot.
There is a lot of it, and that kind of surprised me.
But it works.
Yeah, I would agree.
Overall, I found this title kind of interesting. The selection of mutants felt kind of a little natural and a little random. It was a weird mix.
Yes, because some of them are definitely there, and other ones you're like, huh, okay, I don't know why they're there.
There's a handful that are, you know, what I would associate with kind of Excalibur. I mean, specifically Captain Britain and Betsy Braddock. Yeah. We had, I think, on the cover... No, I guess it was one of the other books where Nightcrawler and Kitty are showing up, but were other members of Excalibur classically.
Correct.
But when we start bringing in Apocalypse, Jubilee, Trinary, who I don't really recall... I mean, I'm sure I've read her before because I've like been reading the X-Men forever. But she didn't really stick out in my mind. And then we've got Rogue and Gambit. It's not a bad lineup.
Not a bad lineup, but those were the characters I didn't expect.
Yeah. What's interesting is Richter was mentioned in the solicit, and he wasn't even in this issue, I think.
He wasn't. I don't remember seeing him in here, and I agree with you there because I saw that, and I was like, huh, missing in action, but maybe he's to come. Who knows?
I think he's there on the cover.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He is on the cover, so I don't know.
I don't know either.
Hey, did you like the appearance of Gold Balls, a.k.a. a new name?
Egg.
I was like, oh, God, please don't. Please tell me you're not going to call him Egg.
I was surprised by that. I did find the comment of that's not going to stick kind of funny.
Yes, that was so funny.
So there's that. I'd like to see him team up with Bacon. I don't know who that would be, but it'd be funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nice little cameo. He looked a little different than I recall him from the last book I read him in, which was probably the Miles Morales thing a while back.
Yeah, me too. He does look different, so I didn't know who it was just from appearance when I first saw him. And the other thing that I had forgotten about, just because, you know, I forget, and then I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah. You know, seeing Betsy still kind of throws me off, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I associate Psylocke so much with the way she looks, and having her look this way, I still just, I don't like it. I understand it. I know the story behind it, but I still, doesn't sit well with me. I want to see the old Psylocke.
The Asian one? Or
yeah, the Asian one. That's how I've always seen her, the Asian one.
Not the old one, though, is the thing.
Correct. That's not the original one. That's the one I grew up with.
I want to see them kind of revive both or something. I would love to see some character that's gone through a number of very different iterations be the one that, for whatever reason, they have to go instantiate the different incarnations.
Yeah, I would like to see that too. It's just kind of weird because, you know, my Psylocke was always the Asian one. I want to see her come back, and then I forgot. Oh, yeah, she's gone. Now we have the new one. But, I mean, it's cool, but just a frustration of mine.
Oh, understandable. Understandable. The whole bit with Apocalypse wanting to have a new name
that we can't pronounce.
Yeah, it's a dot. Two dashes, a vertical line with a dot and above, a below, an A with a dot above and below, and then kind of the inverse of that or whatever. It's hard for me not to look at that and think of the Arthur Fonzarelli, hey, you know.
Now that you said that, I'm going to say that every time I see that. I want to be called hey from now on.
So I just, there were parts of this that I liked. This whole other world storyline, it doesn't seem like a long-term thread for the title.
I agree. I think that's very short-lived.
Arc 2, maybe 3 or something, so I don't know where the title's going to go after that.
Me neither. So I'm curious what they're going to do, because, like you said, this is something to kick it off, something to happen in here. I don't know if I like how the issue ended before the epilogue, the like last little splash. Do you like that?
There were parts of it that were a little confusing as to what was going on.
Yeah.
They lost me at one of the points. It took me a minute to catch on. Oh, I guess that's what happened.
Yeah, I kind of had to read that like a couple times. I was like trying to pace. I'm like, how did this happen? I was like, oh, okay, and this happened. But it wasn't done very well. But do you like seeing that character that way at the end?
The one standing?
Yes.
I think it's interesting. Yeah, I think it works.
Okay, I think that works. I'm cool with that. The other one laying there, I'm like, I don't know if I'm cool with that. But yeah, I think it's cool. The only part that I'm afraid of, they've kind of put all the characters the way they are, and seeing characters change, some people don't like stuff like that. They get offended. And I don't think this will be offensive to many people, but I just worry about that.
Certainly, if you like a character in a particular take or way or whatever, and they go and change it, yeah, I could see where that turns people off. But there's also an aspect where you've got to allow the characters to evolve a bit.
Exactly. That's what I think. So that's why I'm kind of cool with it. Because most of these stories, this type of thing will happen, and then it will change in the future. And people who get just so outraged by stuff, I'm like, just, you know, chill your jets, wait like 6 to 9 months and things go back to normal.
What happened here to me was an evolution of one or two of the characters.
I agree.
I'm good with that. What bothers me is when it's a revolutionary change for the character and it's like, where the hell did this come from?
Yeah, like I didn't like the Iceman thing. When Bendis kind of like, when he was going out the door, mm-hmm. you have a character who's been this way the entire time and was away, and then you change him instantly. But it was weird. It came out of nowhere because there was no hint of that anywhere in the history of the character.
Yeah, I found that to run contrary to the character as depicted in the past. And likewise, like what they're doing with gold balls, turning them into egg and all this kind of a stuff, to me that's revolutionary, not evolutionary.
I agree. Yeah. So yeah, we're in agreement there. So I think this is a good book. Now, I would say I like Marauders a little bit more than this, and I liked X-Men a little bit more than this, but I don't think this was bad. It's just I like those two more.
I like this more than X-Men, but not as much as Marauders.
Okay, so this is in between for you. All right,
yeah,
gotcha.
And closer to the Marauders.
Yeah, I could see that. The X-Men and this one were kind of tied for me, but yeah, I can see why you would like this a little bit more.
I thought the art was solid. I thought it was really good. And while I'm not sure where this title is going to go long term, I'm really enjoying the journey to get there.
I agree. And I like some of the team members who are here. I think it's going to be fun. They have some comedy mixed in here with action. And we have a nice arc that's laid out here and more to come.
Well, and some other things that are kind of teased about some relationships between some various X-Men and where that may or may not go and stuff. That was kind of cool to get back into play.
Yeah, yeah. So I kind of like it. And I think this will be another good book. So far, there haven't been any duds that have come out of this relaunch.
X-Men was the closest so far.
That was a dud for you.
And not a complete dud. It was okay. It just
they just need to pick up the pacing. I think it slowed down too much and have something happen, action-wise.
Something happened. That's what, to me, made Marauders and Excalibur better.
Yeah, stuff happened here where I can see X-Men was probably the most boring of the three. Well, I would agree with you there.
With these, there's the clear lead characters. They were moving stuff forward. A lot of things happened. We got to see other characters and stuff like that. It wasn't just setting the place for the story next issue.
Yeah, and X-Men 1 was definitely setting the place, yeah. So I'm in agreement with you there.
For me, this was a solid B. I think people are going to like it. If you enjoyed the old Excalibur, this is different, but not off-puttingly so. And if you like just the mix of characters they've got, it's a good place to go check it out.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I went with a B. Thought it was a real solid book. I'm on board for it, and hopefully it has good stuff to come out in the future.
Sure hope so. But when I read that that preview for the next one in the back, it's like, man, I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah.
And I mean that literally, because they still got the damn thing encoded.
Yes, I hate that.
You know, it's funny because now that I see it, I recognize the characters before and after the A for Apocalypse or whatever. So I may dig up where they had the answer key for that and see what his name translates to. Maybe it's dog or cat or something.
All right, so you're going to be my decoder. Just fill me in when you find out what it is.
If I bother to check.
All right.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Sounds good.
This is Chrononauts Future Shock number 1 from Mark Millar and Image and stuff. This is a sequel to the Time Travel Chrononauts book from 2015.
Yep.
Which I really enjoyed.
Me too.
Not entirely sure why Millar felt the need to release all 4 issues of this on the same day, but as a reader, I'm okay with it.
That was very bizarre. I don't know why, but I have suspicions maybe why.
What are your suspicions?
One, it's either because it was the 5th week, and you got to have some books coming out in the 5th week. But no, two, also, I think he likes to toy with things and just figure things out and see. And if you throw out 4 single issues, no trade paperback, see if the issues dip. You know, there's this continual dip in issues month after month after month. Let's see what people do with 4 issues. Does everyone just buy the number 1? What happens with it? Do they see the story through to the end? I think he's just testing things, just because he can.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see the numbers for that, which to see if it follows kind of that normal trend of dropping off, because it's all retailer-based at that point, because they're all solicited at the same time and released at the same time.
Yeah, I'm so not. Curious about that.
Yeah, I'll try to remember to discuss that with Eric and Sam when we go through the October numbers.
Yeah, because I almost think by releasing all four issues, you get rid of some of the speculation type thing of the first issue, possibly, and people can't really drop it off. They have to buy all four or buy nothing, because why would you buy the first one? You can't really sample it. You want to see it through because the end is there.
You absolutely can sample it. You can get the first one, and when you come back next week, the rest aren't there, or you forget about it, you move on or something like that.
Yeah, you hope they're there if you liked it.
So, I mean, there's a lot of risk because depending how it gets racked, if you missed that week and you go next week, maybe they're all face out, maybe they're not. And you're going to think, oh, it's a fourth issue. I don't remember getting the others a couple of months ago, so I must not care. I mean, there's a lot of ways it could really mess with the sales dynamic.
Yeah, it really can. So I don't know what he was thinking other than he wanted to see the tailing off, maybe stop the bleed and see if the issue numbers are around the same if you release them all at once.
I don't think he did it for that sort of research. I think he did it because, hey, it's time travel. What the hell? Release it all at once.
Okay. I like that too.
Now, it's been a while since we've seen these characters and stuff. When we see their time ship or whatever the hell it is, and it's this huge electronic guitar or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, did it need to be an electric guitar? No. Did they acknowledge it didn't need to be? Yes. Okay, I'm fine. Did it look cool? Yeah, sure, whatever. It's kind of wild. Now, when this first series was released, there was talk of Universal having optioned it to make it into a movie that I think they were working on in some way, shape, or form from like 2015 to 2017, but we haven't seen that movie yet.
Yeah, I've seen nothing.
So I don't know if that's still in play, if it's not, or maybe we'll see this as a Netflix movie or something, which would be cool.
Yeah, that would be really cool. If they don't do anything with it, Universal, eventually the rights will go back.
Yeah, and this is the kind of thing that would be fun to see, you know, fully 3D rendered as a you know, special effects ship and some stuff like that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think he was a fan of Murder Falcon when I saw that.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. So, I mean, the last one dealt a lot with going into the past, and you do have some past stuff, but I like that this one, you kind of get a flip with the story going into the future, thus Future Shock, the name of the title.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool seeing that.
Yeah, I thought the story was good. There was a lot of action. There was a decent amount of technobabble, not too much, not too little. And the guy's trying to travel to the future and not having any luck and stuff, and kind of near the end, we're starting to figure out what's going on and why. Was cool. It got far enough into the story this issue that I didn't feel like, well, thank God they released them all, because otherwise I'm not going to get to the beginning of the story. But I also felt I'm glad they did release them all, because now I can read the rest of the story all at once.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I really enjoyed it, and I thought he made it very new reader friendly. If you hadn't read the first one, he kind of used the jargon and told you about the suits and things at the very beginning, so you didn't feel completely lost. You get up to speed with the new with the characters that were there, why they do what they're doing. And then, like you said, he kind of hooked me where I'm like, okay, I read the first one, but I'm going to go ahead and read the other four. I want to see how this plays out.
I did the same thing. I blasted through the others, and it was a fun read.
It was.
I think he knows he's got to be an accessible writer and get the story to where he can get into it and stuff, particularly with something where it's been, what, 4 years since the previous volume.
Yeah, exactly. I had kind of forgotten some of the stuff that happened. I mean, you know, my memory's not the best as it is, but this brought up my memories of that story. I was like, oh yeah, I remember the characters, I remember the stuff. So it's kind of like going home and remembering stuff again. I had a lot of fun with it.
And, you know, I remember enjoying the first one, some aspects of the story, but not enough that if I need to quote it chapter and verse to understand this, I mean, I'd have been lost.
Yeah. So I really liked what he did here. And Mark Millar, Millar, why did I say Millar? He always picks great artists. They do a great job in here. It's solid art. And I like the take on it this time about, you know, I'm kind of getting a little bit too far ahead, but he deals with things like if you met baby Hitler, do you kill Hitler? do you let him live?
It brings up the question of what can you and can't you change in time travel?
Yes, what you can and can't change, and if you can change, should you change? And I like that he dealt with that versus just throwing people out there and letting them guess, you know, and have their own theories.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he played fair on that. I thought he gave a good payoff for the story.
Yep.
And the art was solid. There's, again, some cool visuals, some good story moments. And this is one of those where there's that roller coaster ride aspect of it is not a slow plotting story by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it's a darn near breakneck pace. I mean, not in a bad way either. It's just action, entertainment, you're moving along. Yet the characters are developed too, which is kind of weird that he can do that. He's a very good writer.
Yeah, it's one of those where the story is always actively moving forward, not too fast that you get lost, but not too slow that you get bored.
Yeah. Now, my question for you, I mean, I know we're you know, judging and grading this one issue, but having the four come out, did you feel like it read easier than if these would have been spaced out over 4 months? Did you enjoy it more?
I think I enjoyed it more. I think it read better.
Yeah, I agree. Because having those breaks, I think stopping, it's hard to do it, but I'm like, I don't know if there would have been enough there to jog my memory. I might have forgotten some of the things that happened. And reading them back to back like this, I was like, man, it was so much better. The pacing was great. I almost didn't want to put it down. I literally read all four in a row. No, not the next day. I just read all four.
Oh, same here. Same here. But if it had been a monthly release, we got this at the end of October. We'd have gotten the second issue at the end of November. So, what, Thanksgiving weekend or whatever we might have read. Yeah. The next would have been end of December. So, you
Christmas.
Know, Christmas, New Year type stuff. And then the end of January.
Yeah.
By that point, my recollection of what had happened in this first issue would not have been solid enough to really enjoy some of the callbacks and the solidity of the story.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I really loved about this, because we just talked about this our last recording, that I find myself enjoying trades more than the singles, because it's just the spacing. As I get older, and if you're reading a lot of material, I forget what happened 4 or 5 months ago. And with him releasing this, I was like, this is what I want. I love singles. If you're going to do singles, give them to me a little bit closer together. I can actually get into the flow of story. I enjoyed it so much more than I would have if it was spaced out.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wish more people could do this. I know it's not going to happen, but well, I just wish.
There's pros and cons. If it was not a property that I was already familiar with and knew I enjoyed, I don't know that I would have been willing to commit to all four issues at once.
Yeah, because putting in $16 is in that last issue, I think, was $5.99 because it was a big, thick issue.
Yeah.
So if you're ponying up basically $20, that's a lot to ask on a new property.
That's, yeah, for a new property, I think that's a bit of a non-starter for a lot of people.
Yep.
And I just,
I'm so torn on it.
Yeah, because, I mean, an $18 price tag all at once, sight unseen, a little hard to swallow for some people, and rightfully so.
Yeah, it's almost like it was one thing that I don't know he was trying to do this, but Mark Millar, he came out with this thing and he's like, here's the single, here's the trade. There is no trade, but he basically came out with a single trade. And do people enjoy this? Do people not enjoy it? Not many people have done this, I can imagine. And I looked at it and I just found so much enjoyment in being able to read the whole story. Yet I can see the conundrum of new properties. It'd be darn near impossible to do this.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there is going to be a trade for this. I expect there will be.
Yeah.
I don't know why he didn't just release the whole thing as a trade to begin with, other than now he can get people to double dip.
Yep.
And there's an aspect where having it in the comic format, one, if it had been released as a trade and we hadn't reviewed it, I don't know when I would have read it.
Yeah, that's true. It probably would have ended up on my stack and I would have read it, honestly, since it's a trade, maybe a year from now.
Trades, for whatever reason, sit in my stack unread a lot longer than new single issues.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why that is.
Yeah, I feel compelled to read the single issues because they stack up and it feels like there's so much of them. Whereas the trades, I don't know why the stack of trades doesn't bother me. What is that? It's some psychological thing with us.
I've got from Boom a couple of weeks back, the Power Rangers The Psychopath trade or whatever. It's not particularly thick or something, but it's sitting there unread. Whereas if that had been a couple of issues, I'd have just read them.
Huh.
It's just there's a quirk in how I think that trips up on.
Hey, and this worked with us because literally we read all of these single issues, but if there's a trade, we would have pushed aside.
Yeah.
Huh. He found something.
But it's something you can't go back to the well on too many times.
I would agree. So, anyways, I really enjoyed it. I'm glad that he did this, and it made it kind of fun, something different.
Yeah, it was a good story, as I expected it to be, and I'm looking forward to this eventually getting adapted into some sort of a live action thing. I think there's a lot they could do with this, and I enjoyed it. The only thing that has me a little bummed at this is it means Chrononauts is most likely not the Project Xmas thing that he's doing.
Oh, yeah. Did you pre-order that?
I did not.
Okay, I did, and I ordered this. I'm going to order the second, you know, secret issue. I don't know what I'm ordering.
That's why I did not pre-order it.
It could be something great. It could be something horrible. I don't know what I'm ordering, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed that it's good.
When I sent my order into to Cowabunga, I put a message in there to Eric basically saying, yeah, I'm not ordering it, but if it turns out to be a property I'm interested in, I may want to. But yeah, at this point, no, I'm not going to do it sight unseen.
Well, hopefully they leave it open to order, you know, like have some inventory of Diamond or something, because I imagine there'll be a lot of people who don't pre-order and a lot of retailers that don't want to invest a lot of cash, but maybe they'll be like, oh, this was it. Let's get a few more of those.
If they don't announce what it is before it hits the final order cutoff, they've missed an opportunity.
Yeah, that's just kind of insanity then at that point. I'm like, why would you do that to yourself? Because I've gotten burned too many times on that. One time Marvel came out with a top secret trade paperback, and I ordered it, and it was some secret Avengers thing that I didn't want to read.
Yeah.
And so that's frustrating.
Whereas here, we knew what we were getting with the Chrononauts stuff. We knew we were getting it all at once. Hopefully that doesn't mess up my number crunching system. Don't think it will, but it might. But yeah, I enjoyed this. I thought it was fun. I'm going with an A- on this and definitely recommend it.
Yeah, I went with a B+, and I said I definitely would recommend it too. I went with a B+ on this one, and the whole series, though, I would have gone with a solid A.
I can see that. I can definitely
see
that.
This one was good. The other issues really hooked me.
Yeah.
So, good stuff. I was kind of happy, and I liked that we were able to read something different and get something different out there. Now, I did have a question for you.
Okay.
Okay, I've been kind of checked out. I think it's because I'm too busy at work and too busy just doing nonsense in my life. When I say nonsense, it's busy in work, everything like that. But I keep on hearing people talk on the Slack channel about DC with 5G. What is this 5G that they're talking about?
It is a rumor that may or may not have some serious merit to it. It feels like it's got some momentum behind it. But basically, it is a pending reboot that may happen next year, like potentially early next year.
So this is everything that's tying into the Dan Didio, like working on continuity and stuff?
Yes.
Okay, so that's all tied together. Okay, so they're talking about reboot. So tell me what you know so far.
What I know so far, and I have not done a deep dive on the articles and stuff like this, but there have been a couple where he's talking about continuity and they're trying to figure out the different generations of heroes, and they've had this huge, like, massive, it seems like an Excel spreadsheet where, you know, in Generation 1, this is when, you know, Wonder Woman first came to man's world, and the JSA was in the war, and Batman was born, and all this kind of stuff, and then there's the second generation where these things happen, and the third, and the fourth, and then presumably there's going to be a fifth, or whatever. And they're trying to figure out how to basically stitch a cohesive timeline together after all the messes they've made over the last, you know, few decades.
Yeah.
And I wish them luck with that. And if they can pull it off, they could really hook me. If they don't pull it off, they could really alienate me.
Now, yeah.
The rumors I've heard, and again, I'm not up to date on this and stuff like this, but we may wind up early next year with a new Batman that's not Bruce Wayne. It may be Luke Fox.
Oh my God.
We could wind up with a new Superman. It could be Jonathan Kent. It may not be. Don't know.
Huh.
And other new sorts of characters like that in classic personas.
So this could be like a real reboot. A reboot reboot.
Well, it's hard to know if it's a reboot or if it is a changing of the guard.
Okay.
Now, for me, I tend to be very particular with how I use some of these terms, and I know it annoys some people, but if you're not clear with what you're saying, you're not really saying anything clearly.
All right.
So for me, a reboot is basically saying, you know what, we are, or it's like a computer, you're flushing the memory, you're starting from scratch and going again.
That's New 52.
Yeah. For the most part.
Okay.
Green Lantern and Batman kind of jumped over that and didn't get the full reboot that most of the other characters did. We saw Superman come to Earth for the first time, Supergirl come to Earth for the first time. New origins for a lot of characters. ones that violated, not violated, but differed vastly, I should say, from what had happened pre-Flashpoint. Now, you could argue that Flashpoint was arguably the impetus for this, and therefore, conceivably, it's an incontinuity reboot. To me, this is different than Crisis on Infinite Earths, though, where we saw all of this happen, and it took a little while to solidify, but we knew it was a clearly, here's what happened. They went to the dawn of time, literally kicked off the Big Bang slightly differently, and things rolled out differently. What happened with Flashpoint and the point that changed there was in the recent past, spun off a new timeline, got changed again, spun off presumably the new 52, but was changing things that happened well before it because there's like some kind of bizarre echo in the past or whatever stuff.
Okay.
Whether 5G is going to be that level of reboot or if it's going to be kind of what we saw at one point when we got a new Green Lantern and a new Flash and stuff like that, where it's just a changing of the guard, I don't know.
So it's the mystery. And so 5G, we don't even know what that is. I guess the fifth generation of, who knows? That's what I was guessing.
But if you look at some of the stuff they've shown, and only small parts of this Excel file or whatever have been clearly visible to the public or whatever. But there's one that it's talking about, like, the Justice Society and the All-Star Squadron around World War II.
Okay.
And in that time frame is Bruce Wayne being born.
Which would make him really, really old.
Yeah.
He'd be in his 80s.
I don't feel confident that the current powers that be at DC have a good enough grasp on continuity, on their characters, on comic book storytelling to set the company and those properties up for success for the long term.
Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Huh. Well, that'll be interesting. So that's supposed to take place maybe next year?
Yeah.
Well, I'm on board. I'll check it out. We'll be here to review that stuff if they do it. So I'm kind of excited to see how it plays out, but it kind of felt like they were building towards that. I don't know why, but it's just been feeling like that for me for a little while, and now they're starting to leak stuff, so it must be coming.
I don't know that it must be coming. It's hard to know. I think something is coming. I think 5G is coming. I think they're going to retool, revector, whatever. But this feeling that they're building to it, it's inevitable or whatever, completely bogus.
Yeah.
And I think that subject may come up a little in one of the books we review next week of what they're doing versus what has gone before. I don't know. Haven't read next week's books yet. Haven't gotten them. Actually, just got them.
Yeah, me too.
Haven't pulled them out of the box yet. But there's some aspects where these companies don't really seem to have a solid game plan, and they're doing a little too much just-in-time storytelling.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily the best thing. They honestly should have long-term game plans for this stuff. But the game plan has to – it's got to be so difficult, though, if you're writing 50, 60 books to coordinate amongst them and get them all kind of headed towards the same trajectory with different personalities and stuff. I can just imagine that's got to be a monumental task.
But they don't all have to head in the same trajectory for the same purpose at the same time or whatever. If you've got a really solid game plan for like the Batman family or the Avengers or whatever, the Batman stuff doesn't have to be in lockstep with what's going on with Green Lantern or Flash or something.
Yeah, and actually I appreciate it when that doesn't, because it messes things up when they do those big mishmashes events that cross over in all each other's books.
There needs to be some coherence across the line, absolutely, and the overall continuity needs to be solid.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like you've got to have one game plan to rule them all.
Yeah, and I think that's why I've become – I think what makes it difficult is it seems like – well, especially at Marvel, they do a lot of events. And if the event is too big, now you got to get everyone on board. Now, what I liked about this X-Men thing with Jonathan Hickman, it felt like it didn't affect anything else. So when they're doing events inside the X-Books, I like that. When they do an event inside the Avengers books, I like that, or Spider-Man's books. When they do an event when it's touching everything, they need to be few and far between, like the Civil War where it's touching everything, because they have too much of that overlap, and it's frustrating to me as a reader. But when they do it within that little world, I love it.
Well, I think there's an art to telling a event-level story where something happens that just by the nature of what happens impacts everybody.
Yeah.
You know? And there have been a few world events in the real world that literally the world stopped and took notice.
Yep.
You know?
I would agree.
Hopefully not too many of those over the course of history, but enough that it's like, doesn't matter what your story was at the time, you're detoured for that. But that doesn't mean in the comic book realm that suddenly all the characters have to come together, get the big game plan together, go fight the battle together, etc.
No, they can be aware of it and know about it, be impacted about it, you know, the way they feel and what, you know, recognizing what happened. But yeah, just stopping everything, and that's a different thing. Yeah, I agree.
I always thought one fun kind of crossover-ish, event-ish storyline that would be fun to do, and Marvel would be the place to do it, would be Gridlock.
Gridlock?
You have one story kind of sort of told real time, kind of not. It'd be hard to coordinate with everybody, but it would happen over the course of, you know, a few weeks. Classically, it would have been a month, so you could have gotten all the titles in.
Okay.
So many of the books are based in New York.
Yep.
Imagine having a day where the Fantastic Four is having some battle and it really messes up traffic at this one intersection. Meanwhile, across town, something's going on with the Avengers and messing up traffic over there. Plus, something Daredevil's doing has done this. Spider-Man over there. The Hulk is battling through town or whatever. And the entire city grinds to a gridlock because they just can't move.
Everyone's stranded.
You know, that's not a story you could really tell in DC or whatever because they're not all like co-located in the same town or whatever.
No.
But that's the kind of thing where you could actually have a couple of Easter eggs where you have one fight that because of whoever it is, maybe it's Quicksilver or whatever, is referenced, or you see bits and pieces of across the board, or you see debris from one referenced, you know, scene in another, or some, you know, somebody, you know, the Hulk throws a car and you see it fly through five different other fight scenes or something. You know, you could tell that as a fun story that impacts everybody in the moment, but is not, oh my God, the world is totally different now.
Exactly. That would be really cool. Where they're really, you feel like you're in one universe, one thing's happening, it's affecting all the books, but life goes on.
Yeah. You know,
that would be hilarious.
There's other times where you could have that big cosmic, you know, major threat or whatever, but everybody's coming at it from different angles and they'd never totally realize they were all dealing with the same thing, maybe at cross purposes, maybe an accidental alignment or something.
That would be really cool.
You know, there's there are ways to tell these kinds of stories well.
Yeah, to tell it well and to make it interesting and engaging, even though you call it gridlock or something, you can make it fun, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can make it really fun. I just read a little story. It wasn't like that, but did you read that Contagion story?
I did not.
Just kind of, oh, okay. That was just kind of a fun one. It mostly, I mean, it took place more places, but it took place in, you know, New York, of course, and an outbreak of mm-hmm. stuff that happened. And it impacted all the characters. I mean, it was a little bit bigger than that, but it was just a one-off.
Yeah, but that was a self-contained miniseries, whereas
exactly.
It used to be back in the day, particularly at Marvel, that you would have these things, and Secret Wars 1 and 3, I think, were the good examples of this, where it felt like you were – each title was a different window into the same universe at the same time.
And I remember reading stuff like that, and it was really cool.
You know,
it made you feel like the books were interacting with each other, literally.
Yeah. Well, and that you were not reading different stories, different continuities, different things.
Yeah. And you want to know what? I think the people being in the bullpen, the writers being in the bullpen, made that possible.
I think that kind of helps, but I think it's also a matter of, are they team players? Do they want to work well together? Can they get a certain synergy working with each other that really builds up versus working solo with different, you know, 6-issue arcs and stuff?
Very true, because there are a lot of ego in the comic writing world, a lot of egos out there, and some people I can imagine don't behave well or want to interact well with other fellow writers, even if they're at the same company.
Well, there was a point at which I forget which writers it was, but there were two writers in particular that were almost sparring back and forth in their titles. One would establish that something had happened, and then before too long, the other writer would establish, no, that's not what happened. No, that would never have happened.
That's got to be fun for the editors, I imagine.
Yeah, it's like they're just, you know, jabbing at each other or whatever. It's like, there are times where it's fun. There are times where it's like, come on, guys, grow up.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I remember a fun thing where people were jabbing each other, but it was really for fun. It was It was Peter David and someone else. They both wrote the same title, and people got to vote on who was the better writer.
Oh, that I don't remember.
I remember it was a while back. It was a long time ago. It was it was in the 90s somewhere, and I can't remember what it was, but I remember Peter David won the fight.
There was one, and it may have been Peter David and John Byrne, but it was dealing with like Doctor Doom.
Yeah,
and like at one point, I think it was. Who's the guy who does the dead the arcade? I guess it's arcade. He does the Death Trap amusement park kind of things.
Oh yeah, arcade, yeah.
Yeah, and he at one point struck a match on Doctor Doom's gauntlet or something, and you know that was later revealed by Byrne to have been a Doom bot because the real Doom would never stand for that sort of thing. And there's a kind of this back and forth, and it's like there are times where it can be fun. There are other times, and I like having stuff that happens in one title referenced in another in a way that adds, but doesn't mean you've got to have a PhD and read everything to understand anything.
Exactly. Yes.
So there's some fun stuff you can do with that.
I agree. So hopefully I'm wishing DC well with 5G. The thing that makes me kind of worried is usually before they wind up and they do stuff like that, the best artists kind of get pulled off books to kind of ramp things up. If it's a rebootish type of thing, we don't know. And the best writers kind of get pulled off to kind of get a head start on the writing. So the books that are kind of left out there in the marketplace tend to get kind of really low quality for a while.
Well, the other thing I've heard rumor of is like a Convergence 2 kind of a thing where they'd pause everything for 2 months with this other thing going on.
That's what I heard too.
So they can catch up and get ahead on the other books because they're basically just barely getting the books out in time.
Yeah. So, I'm curious to know what's going to happen. So whatever is going to happen, something big is going to happen with DC next year. And which I guess it's about the right time because they've been having a rough time in the market. So.
Yeah, but they got to have a good game plan. They've got to understand continuity. They've got to understand storytelling, and they've got to understand the audience, and I'm not sure they do.
Yeah, and I'm still keeping my fingers crossed. I mean, this is not to be mean or say anything bad about the people, but I think they need a change of leadership at the top. I think C.B. Sobolski helped with Marvel. That change up was a help to Marvel, and I think a change at DC of the same magnitude would be a great move before they go in a new direction. Otherwise, it's going to be the same people making the same decisions, and they've proven that maybe they haven't made the best decisions in the past.
I would agree with that. I do think it's time for a shakeup. Not to say anyone's got to get fired or anything, but they need some new blood creatively and editorially, and they need to have just a new mindset.
Yeah, it's always good to have churn, and I know that sounds bad, but I notice even at my own like business – you know, I have employees that I love and they're there for a long time and I treat them very well. But when you get new people who come in and someone who goes out, you know, and that just that new energy they bring in sometimes boosts things up to another level.
I think companies are most successful when you've got enough long-term employees that you've got good, strong corporate memory, and you've got enough new employees that you've got new ideas, new ways of thinking, and fresh eyes on the problem.
I agree.
There's an important balance to be had there.
Yeah, that's the winning strategy. You got to always have new blood, and you got to have some people who are the real stalwarts that, like you said, build the culture.
Yeah. So let's see. Coming up, by the time this episode goes up, the deadline will have passed for the current preview spotlight. The next previews is going to come out day before Thanksgiving, I believe. So that deadline will be the 7th of December, I believe. And if it changes, I'll let people know. The one thing I do want to point out about the November order form is there is a couple of items that got caught in an odd situation where they're not going to be in previews at all.
Wonderful.
Apparently, this whole Christmas New Year's thing caught people by surprise at one or two companies. So there is a small, finite number of things that are getting kind of solicited through the Previews Plus thing or whatnot. This is hitting like a handful of things over at Image and maybe a dozen or more things over at Marvel.
So do you think like Eric will be emailing something out to us and saying, hey, this stuff's coming out, it's not in previews? Or
I certainly believe so, yes.
Okay, awesome. I'm like, I don't even know what Image Plus is, but all right. Or Previous Plus or whatever it was.
Well, Previous Plus is where they do like some of the variant covers and stuff that just falls between the cracks.
Okay, all right.
Anything on the sales numbers that have an 8,000 or 9,000 item code after the month and the year,
yeah,
those are things that were not in Previews itself.
Okay, gotcha.
So there are a couple of things that look to be noticeable deals that people would be upset if they missed and wondered, well, how did I miss this? So definitely be on the lookout with that. If you're shopping with Cowabunga, I do think Eric's going to be able to take care of this. He's on top of things. If you've got a local comic shop, you may want to go and ask, hey, what are you doing for, you know, the stuff? This is all stuff coming out on January 1st.
Okay.
So just pay attention. Make sure you don't miss some stuff that you might be interested in.
Sounds good.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it for me.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Legion of Superheroes number 1 from DC, X-Force number 1 from Marvel, and New Mutants number 1 also from Marvel.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.